This summer is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. Three rainy, muddy, interesting days in upstate New York in which there was music and there was love and there was peace and there was Sweetwater, the band you're about to meet. Let's start off by going around the room, introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Nancy Nevins. I'm singing with Sweetwater and hanging out with them.
Fred Herrera, bass player.
Alex Del Zoppo, keys.
And you know, yeah, there's a lot of significance to what's in this room right now because these three members are the original Sweetwater. There were seven members. Unfortunately, some have passed on. One has gotten out of the business. But you three are still there, still kicking. And why we care is because you were the first band to play at Woodstock. And this summer is that big Woodstock anniversary that everybody's been talking about. And so I want to start off with Woodstock, and I want to start off with sort of what your recollections are, your memories of this great big concert in this great big muddy field. And let's start with Nancy.
Well, I mean, mostly remember the size. Boy, it was overwhelmingly populated. I mean, we played a lot of festivals before Woodstock, but nothing like this. I mean, there were bodies as far as you could see to the horizon from the stage.
And it wasn't that you weren't used to seeing big crowds because you guys had been in pop festival after pop festival. It's just this was particularly, and I think as Alex once pointed out, ridiculously huge, right?
Huge!
Alex?
Ridiculous
big
was the word, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's your thought about that? I mean, you know, there are people that say those 3 days defined a generation.
Well, they did. We didn't know it at the moment, but it sure felt different. And the definition of the generation at that point came from the fact that everyone was in this big, you know, disorganized mess, and they were all getting along just fine. And there's about 500,000 of them, and it caught the attention of the establishment, and the establishment suddenly realized, hey, these guys might have something.
Yeah.
So
now you were going to be the first act,
yes.
But as it turned out, you were the first band, not the first act, and that happened because, Fred, you were trying to navigate through this crowd.
We were scheduled to be the first group on. However, as we were being transported there by the tour promoters, we got stuck in the roads that were completely congested with abandoned automobiles from the people that were on their way to the concert. There's no way to get in or even back to the hotel. So they called by walkie-talkies to bring in some helicopters, and somehow the helicopters found out where we were and picked us up from the stalled location and took us to the festival site.
That in itself is a story, isn't it? I mean, that could be a movie of the week.
Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, he's shortened that tremendously.
Probably,
yeah.
But you finally get there, you get on stage, and you've got all these people out there, and what's the first song you do?
What was the first song we did? It was something up. Was it Lookout?
I think it might have been Lookout.
Might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not familiar with Sweetwater, they have a lot of great music. And, you know, as they'll tell you here in a few minutes, they were very close to hitting stardom, but tragedy struck, and we're going to get that in a second. But first, let's listen to that song.
Down your house, break and hold, I'll bring you love and money. Ooh.
So look at that. That's a pretty good song. Did you write that?
No, I
Nancy
did.
Wrote it.
You did, Nancy?
Yes.
What was the motivation for that song?
Well, I was just kind of sitting around, I guess some, I don't know. I was really, it was decades ago, Al. Anyway, let me just probably sitting around thinking about evil and the devil. And, you know, it comes to everybody. Everybody gets tempted to do wrong things. And so I just wanted to kind of address that. Don't do it. Look out.
Yeah.
You know, look underneath.
And you know, you had a song back then that was an anti-war song. And that was called?
What's Wrong?
What's Wrong?
what's wrong in your heart? Do you feel that soon mankind and reason will part? As each day worsens, you fear you will start on that anxiously dark endless journey. What's wrong with this talk? As its vintage here gives us some worsening crop of hatred that one day could cause it to stop. A lesson we all could be learning.
What's Wrong was a very typical sort of anti-war song, wasn't it?
Well, actually, it was not a hard protest like a lot of songs were then. It was more of a questioning, like, you know, look at this and look at this and look at this and why isn't this right? You know, I thought it was pretty balanced.
And, you know, it's what a lot of young people do in any generation. It's like, why isn't this right? Yeah. You know, what's wrong with society? What's wrong with our schools? What's wrong, you know?
The song doesn't speak just about the war. It speaks to the culture.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's true. And I think and it could be viewed as a song that could be multi-generational.
Absolutely. It absolutely could, because everyone reaches that point in life where they start to question everything around them. And they start to see, you know, my students are like that. They start to see through things, and they go, oh, Miss Nevins, you know, do we really have to do this? But yeah, but everybody questions it. But the title is What's Wrong? And so it's that question, and we want the answer to be, let's make this right.
Right. But there was, not long after Woodstock, something that was very wrong.
Altamont, terrible. It was the end of the Innocents. You know, the end of Innocence, which is another song. But, you know, it was a time just ended when we could really trust each other. We were friends with strangers, and we palled around with everybody, and now there was fear. Whenever fear comes in, boy, you just can't win.
It was an age of flower children back then. And there was an innocence, and you know, hard as it may be to imagine me as a flower child, there was a hippie Hal. There was. I had long hair and everything.
There was also that movie, what was the one with Peter Fonda?
Oh, Easy Rider.
Easy Rider. Yeah, right. Which, you know, at the end shows you the innocence. They weren't quite innocent people, but it shook a lot of people as far as a realization of the culture of the age. I wanted to mention one little allude to the Woodstock thing, is that we had been playing for a number of outdoor pop festival type of events. A lot of people up to that point. There wasn't the size of the crowds that we were playing, which was 50,000-60,000 people, which was eclipsed most other concert venues by about 10. So there's a lot of people at that point. And even with that, one of the comments that Nancy made on stage at Woodstock was, wow, there's a lot of people here. Which I said, my God, most of the places we've been playing was a lot of people. And even to that, this crowd was so much larger than the other crowds we've been playing at.
Well, I think one of the comments that really resonated with me was something Alex said, and that's that there were 500,000 people out there, which to him sort of registered as a million ears and a million eyes, and you know it and that puts pressure on you. Did you feel pressure up there?
Not from the people that were out front. Myself personally, I was just worried about, this is Fred speaking, I was worried about the logistics of what we were doing on stage. We were,
it's a job.
We were disoriented from the fact that they threw us on stage. We were spread out too far without the proper audio monitors to hear ourselves. Things like that. That's the kind of pressure I felt trying to get things together. It would have been the same any other concert.
I want to move on to a couple other things, but before we do that, this is the 50th anniversary year of Woodstock. And I know it's easy to say, wow, time flew, you know, because 50 years is like, wow, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. But what is the thought about 50 years later? What do you see as you sort of sum up what life has been like for the last 50 years?
I see a lot of positive effects from those years. I see a lot of change did come from the goodness and the peace and the love. I see a lot of change, and I see backlash. I see people who say, you know, we went through a long time where everybody was making fun of hippies, and then fashion brought hippies back. Hippie fashions came back. And people now are talking about peace and love in response to current things. And, you know, there's a lot of good there. There was a lot of good there. And there was, we would tend to look for the goodness in each other first. I think that's flipped. And we'd like to see that go back a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you look back, I kind of remember that time as tie-dye shirts and beards and mustaches.
Bell-bottoms?
Bell-bottom jeans and all that sort
incense
of thing.
Incense and
you know.
Peppermint?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the difference
is... That was a good song, by the way.
Yeah,
it was a really good song.
They were friends of ours.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. And now the difference is you pay $400 for jeans that are already ripped.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Hey, that, by the way, that concert, Jimi Hendrix... That was one of the big names at that concert, Janis Joplin, you know. This was a big deal. This was the collection of an awful lot of very well-known groups, including yours. And you know, when I even say Jimi Hendrix, it reminds me of when I saw him in concert as a kid. It was my first concert in 1968. And, you know, I guess I didn't understand the impact of Hendrix at that point. I was a young guy. But he was quite an artist, and it was unfortunate he died young, but he was just like Joplin.
27, that's a dangerous age.
It is a dangerous age. So here you are back then, and you're 20.
Yes.
And it's 4 months after Woodstock, and you're in your car, and you got a friend with you, and what happens?
We were on our way. We'd spent the day just sort of hanging around Hollywood and playing. She was a wonderful musician, Diane, and... We were just hanging around, and we decided we were going to go over to Alex's parents' house and watch a Steve Allen show that was airing that night. It was 3 days after we had taped the Red Skelton show. This is early MTV. So anyway, I got on the freeway. It had been raining all day, and the streets were just slightly slick. So there was a big fender bender all across. It was a 134 freeway between San Fernando and Pacific. And there wasn't a clear lane to go through. So I had to stop my car. And I turned to my friend and I said, "Phew, we made it." Right after I said that, this drunk hit me. He didn't even see me. He was going 65 miles an hour, they said, later. When my car stopped spinning, I went straight up and I made a crater the shape of my head in the roof of the car. And when the car stopped spinning, my friend got out and started wandering around looking for help from me. And there was one off-duty nurse in the other cars who found my friend. And together they came back to my car. And this medically trained person could see how much trouble I was in because I was just keeled over on the seat. There was one ambulance at the scene, one policeman, and the nurse told the policeman, "This girl's got to go." And I'm reporting because I don't have any memory of this. They put me into the ambulance. I went into grandma seizures. And then they took me to Glendale Memorial Hospital on the one night of the month when all the neurologists of Southern California, the cream of the crop, were having their regular monthly meeting. And they all worked on me. And they all said, "This girl will not live. No one could survive a blow like that." And you know what? I think they're all dead.
You're right. Well, you know, you're lucky. Yeah, yeah. You're lucky as hell. Or lucky as hell.
What the hell?
What the hell? Yeah, no, you're awfully lucky.
Very
and
fortunate,
as you've
yeah.
told me, blessed. I mean, you had a near-death experience right there.
I did. I did. I don't remember any of it.
You went into a coma, right?
Yes.
And you were on life support.
Yes. Didn't even have a heartbeat. All systems down. I've had the last rites, which I hope the operative word is last. Do they last till you're 80 or 90 or whatever?
Oh, they expire at a certain point?
Yeah, I hope they don't.
I was like, uh-oh.
Now, I've already had them. I've had all the sacraments. Yeah. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
What a Catholic.
So the band disbanded.
Nancy, I think he's referring to your vocal cords.
Yeah, well, that was a big loss because you lost a vocal cord on that, right? It was paralyzed.
Well, I did. It got scarred from, they were trying to save my life, so it kind of wrecked it. And wrecked my cord. And, you know, in a way, there's a way to look at that as wrecking your life. But I learned to sing again. I learned to talk, and then I learned to sing again. And I had to learn to walk. And actually, Alex walked me for the first time down the hospital corridor. And it was, I come out of this coma. I came out of the coma, and they said, well, if she comes out of the coma, she'll be a vegetable. Well, I knew who Tricky Dick was. I could add 13 and 4, and I was just really irritated. You know, I was inconvenienced by all this.
In other words,
support.
you were able to intelligently think things through. It wasn't
absolutely.
Like you were out in the ozone.
I was intelligent enough to be angry and pissed off about it.
Yeah,
they told us over and over that she might be a vegetable if she lives at all, and that was a very strange couple of weeks. I got to tell you. But she came out of it, and everything was fine except she could barely whisper.
Yeah.
And we started to realize slowly that her voice had been dealt a mighty blow.
Now, she decided to go ahead and leave the band so that the band could disband and become another operation of some kind for the future because she felt that she didn't want to do anything that would harm your futures. 20 years later, you guys reconnect. Tell me what happens.
Well, there's a few things that happened in between, but basically, we lost track of her after that. She made an album herself, and it was quieter and different, you know, a different sort of thing. But then we lost track of her for about 20-something years. It's amazing, all those years. And then we found her again in the 90s.
Where was she?
In Orange County.
Okay. I was afraid you were going to say, you know, she was in church somewhere. And
I was living in Laguna Beach.
You were living the
styling,
life?
Yeah.
You were living the life?
Yeah.
So you find her 20 years later, you come back together, and ever since you've been playing here and there.
Yeah, well, basically what happened then was we were going to have a surprise party for Fred, who was turning a significant age. And
21?
yeah, let's say 21, yeah. And so a friend of ours decided, why don't you come over to my house and start rehearsing some of the stuff, and we'll surprise Fred and do some Sweetwater songs, and he'll just join in and so forth. And we did that, and we thought, my God, this works. We can do this again, you know. And so, I mean, the same keys and everything. We didn't have to baby her for her voice or anything, and it was really cool. So then we started playing.
I noticed when you sang, there is a kind of a hoarseness to
well,
it. But was that your voice before also?
No.
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 Okay.
No.
You didn't have that Demi Moore thing going on?
Demi Moore? Who's that? I learned to get one chord to do the work of two, actually.
Oh, wow.
I had to work with an opera guy, and he taught me how to do that, and it took a long time. But it's a different voice now. It's not the same voice because I'll never sing like that again. I can't.
You went off and tried to strum up, for lack of a better term, another career.
Yes. Yes, I did. I became a professor of English, and I've been teaching now for 29 years. And it's joyful, too. I mean, it's, you know, you have a chance to work with other people and do something different. And sometimes they're interested in the stories I have to tell. Usually not.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it must be pretty interesting to have a teacher who was at Woodstock performing on stage.
I used to never tell anybody. And then I'd tell them, and their eyes would glaze over a little bit. And I'd have to say, that was early Coachella.
That's right. It is early Coachella. So as we, you know, we look back on this 50th anniversary, Fred, and sort of what sticks out in your mind is sort of the purpose of the whole thing.
I think a lot of people are searching for a purpose still. I'm just surprised about the increased interest. I didn't think there was that much interest from the current generation, but there's still a lot of people out there that look at this as a landmark point in
and there was an effort to try to bring together a 50th anniversary celebration. Seems like that hasn't really happened.
It hasn't materialized yet, but it's to be determined, I guess. There's a number of efforts out there to put together an anniversary event with a number of groups at different locations, different promoters.
Seems to me that would be incredibly fun.
I agree with you. I think the whole story of Woodstock was about the people, which is why I don't think they can really do a new one, because they have the incredible ticket prices. They didn't
the
have
almighty
any tickets.
Dollar is involved.
Yeah, the original.
There wasn't a ticket back then, like $18 and
$7.
$7, and now you go to a concert, it's $300, $400, $500
at
maybe $2,000, $3,000 if you're toward the front of the concert hall.
Right. Yep.
Pretty amazing.
The interesting thing about Woodstock was they had this little pamphlet that told you it's like $7 a day, and as if you could go Friday and not Saturday, but come back Sunday. I don't know what they were thinking, because the whole thing was to be outside, and there's no way to control the crowds or do anything.
Right.
And it was so the whole thing was a mistake. They didn't even get the fences up before they started.
Well, don't you think it was sort of like this great idea, but they didn't know exactly how to execute it?
Well,
and so when they started to, it was tripping over your own feet?
Yeah. Exactly. They tried to do it in the original town of Woodstock. That's why the name held. And then those people decided, oh, my God, we're going to be overrun with hippies, and they kicked them out. And then they went to Wallkill, which is another place in upstate New York, and the same thing happened there. And so they had like 3 weeks or something, and they moved to Yazger's farm. And old man Yazger said, yeah, why not? You know, and he let them set up there and do their thing. And I guess no one knew how many people would show up.
That's the thing. By virtue of him saying kicked out, it was that these communities would not issue a permit.
Yeah.
That's still the same situation today.
Yeah, that's
what's going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting to hear you say that people were concerned about all the hippies coming in. Hippies were pretty safe, pretty peaceful. You didn't see hippies out, you know.
But they frightened people because of the way they looked. They were different.
And there were people involved in anti-war protests and things like that. And there were drugs, and I understand all of that. But, you know, it's like every generation has its, you know, people
bohemian
element. Exactly. and so that was then, and this is now, and so you end up with sort of people taking on different forms of thought. So where does Sweetwater sort of go from here? Does it continue to perform? Do you end up going to new concert venues? Do you play the Troubadour? Where do you go?
We're trying not to die.
Well, I hope not. Don't do that. But, you know, you seem to want to play.
That's a good question.
You seem to want to play some more, so.
Yeah, we've been doing that infrequently over the years, and this year we decided let's do something closer to what we used to do. And we were trying to get on Michael Lang's thing, but it seems to not
be. That would have been the reunion.
Yeah, the big monkey.
The big reunion,
That fell apart.
Big kahuna. It's, so far it looks like it has. But we've signed on to do another festival in New York this summer. So we're doing the Great South Bay Fest, which happens every year. It's got nothing to do with Woodstock.
Right.
But they're having a Woodstock Day. And we're the only actual band that played Woodstock that's going to play at this thing.
Do you bring in extra players to help you perform, because you had seven originally as part of the group?
That's what we're doing.
I see.
Yes.
We're meeting them for the first time in New York.
You have a music video out there that we've looked at. I don't know what year that was done, but you could really see in the dancing in the streets and on the sidewalks, and you could see the enthusiasm in this group. And it seemed like every person brought something to the table.
Exactly. I think we did. It was a fun group. It was a lot of fun to do that. And, you know, my mom was terribly pleased by, you know, Sweetwater's success. And, you know, people say, yeah, I know her. You know, people used to hate me in high school. And so, but it was, and we enjoyed it. We enjoyed each other, and we were integrated. We were like a mini United Nations already, and we enjoyed that. And there was, we were really ahead of our time musically because we didn't even have one guitar. Most of the time, we played different instruments. And, you know, that was before the fusion category.
Right, you guys almost were at the front of that with fusion of different instruments, different sounds, different
right
genres.
In front. Absolutely.
You know, right. And so that served you well.
Yes.
And so I guess, you know, I'm sort of curious about, you know, whether you might have another album. Are you working on some new songs, that sort of thing?
Always.
Always? Always working on new songs? But when are you going to go to the studio?
Well,
I want to go.
Let's go.
I want to go.
We're in the studio right now.
Yeah, come on, let's sing. Ready? Do a little motherless child for me.
Oh, sometimes I feel like a motherless child.
You know, the one I like that you guys do is For Pete's Sake.
Oh, we love that.
Nice instrumental. Alex wrote that. It's got a nice feel to it. In fact, let's let everybody hear a few seconds of that song. What was it that motivated you to write that song?
The melody, the idea that we actually had four people singing at that time, but we do it as three now, and that we could sing together and just no lyrics, just laws.
What has it? It has. I don't know. I don't want to say it's exactly a Sergio Mendes sort of feel, but it has light.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It's a bossa nova.
Is it a bossa nova?
It's a different sort of a bossa nova.
I like it. I've always kind of enjoyed it. In fact, now that I've gotten to know you guys, I listened to it in the car. So I've got Sweetwater in my portfolio of music.
You ever heard of, back in those days, a group called the Swingle Singers?
What, say it again?
The Swingle Singers.
And they sang?
They did Mozart type of, Bach type of.
Was it a cappella?
It was a cappella, except it had a bass and a snare drum.
I have a feeling that I do remember.
And they
them.
Used to sing all these songs without lyrics. And it was very much like what you hear For Pete's Sake.
Except Pete's Sake isn't Mozart or Bach.
Right.
It's not?
It's almost there.
It's Del Zoppo.
Yeah.
There you go.
Isn't that better than Mozart or Bach?
This is why I love Hal. He's the one guy in the United States who pronounces my name correctly.
Yay!
Well, you're almost an Italian. You're,
almost, but not quite.
Yay!
Yeah, you know, I so enjoyed getting to know you guys and learning a little bit about your past and. We're all pretty much the same age group, and I'm 112, and you know I know you're not 112, but you know I think that it's so wonderful when people that used to work together have reason to come back and work together again.
I do too, because we can do a better job.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but the other way to look at it is you've got warmth, friendship, camaraderie. I hear you talking to each other about each other, and I can tell there's a real good friendship here. Am I right, like, or am I wrong?
Kind
you're
of
right.
A dysfunctional family, but they've known each other for a long time.
How long have you guys known each other?
Sorry,
you're up.
Oh, geez, I was born and grew up half a block away from where he was born and grew up.
But really,
I don't remember him so much as a kid until about junior high school.
How'd you meet?
Played music together.
Yeah.
But how did that happen?
But in school.
We had a mutual friend who was playing music, and, you know, we both ended up in that band, and then, you know, various other things.
What do you think of today's music?
There's a lot of good stuff and a lot of
what do you like?
Strange stuff.
Yeah.
What do I like?
What do you like?
I like just randomly listening to stuff and seeing how, you know, how it
sort
affects me.
Sort of an eclectic
me.
Feel of
yeah,
things,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Nothing serious.
What do you dislike?
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know. What I dislike is, people don't realize that there is a category like this, but it's like sex pop. I call it that because it's, you know, people who appear almost naked, and that's what their appeal is. But people don't realize it, and they listen to it enough times they get used to it, like
I've
a commercial.
I've never heard of that before.
Well, that's because I came up with it.
Oh, yeah, it was your.
If you see it on
remember
TV,
Mozart?
That's
yeah, right, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
No, I mean seriously, it's that's what's selling, and it's just that's not everything, but it's just to me, it's like yeah, I know why people like this.
And so you've been in the music business for decades. I mean, is it the same in some ways, or is it just completely massively different than what it was?
Everything recycles back on itself eventually. And in the day that when we were in there, groups would influence each other. And, you know, the Beatles would do something and the Beach Boys would want to do something better and yada, yada, yada. It goes on. But now it's people are, you know, we were different because we all had different ideas and we all came from different backgrounds. I mean, vastly different backgrounds. So in a way, we were unique and didn't compete with anyone. And that kind of worked out to our advantage and sometimes to our disadvantage. But now it's all business. It's yeah. Almost like thinking ahead, like, you know.
Formula.
Formulaic, yeah.
But you know, for seven people, let's say, originally there was eight, right? At some
seven
point.
For
eight.
A short period
yeah,
of time.
Yeah, for a short yeah. period of time. But for seven people to come together eclectically out of nowhere, and one, meet, two, like each other, three, harmonize, play music together, and have it all work. To me, that seems magical in a way.
It was. Yeah. I think that's a great word for it. I think it was a lot of magic there. And it was, it may have, you know, on paper it might look like an accident, but really I think there was a real reason for us to have come together then, just as there is coming together now. I mean, for me, the big difference, of course, is technology, which has affected everything, has certainly imposed itself on the music business. And, you know, a lot of us lost our place when that happened, and we just did. And, of course, I admire the dancers and all this, but they brought so many people into these, what you called sex pop. That was great. but you see all these dancers, and the problem is young people think that's music, and it's just dancing, and it's wonderful, and it's hard to do. I can't do a lot of that, I know for sure, but it's not the tune. It's not sitting down. No one goes out to the park and plays for free anymore. No one plays for free. Sitting down, but when you can sit down and create magic with another artist, that's very special.
You know what? It's interesting because our parents would have said that the music we like is yeah. annoying. Their parents would have said the music they like is annoying.
This is true.
We tell our kids that the music they like is annoying because every generation has a different idea of what sounds good to them. And, you know, when you go back to my dad's generation, that was the 40s, that was big band, that was very different than what transpired later. As I was growing up, it was the Beatles, it was, you know, that whole generation of British music invading the country. And even the 50s, though, there was some great stuff going on in the 50s. And now we're into hip-hop and all kinds of different things. It's all kind of like morphed along the way from this, that, to the other. But I think, you know, I think the more types, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the more types of music you have, that's more selection for people to enjoy. And if you don't have, look, I don't necessarily like a lot of hip hop, but there are certain songs I do like.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. You know? And so if you have a buffet of different things, then you can put what you want on your tray. And with
exactly.
today's music, with like Apple Music and Spotify and Pandora and all these different things, that's kind of the way it works.
Well, when I go to the buffet, I keep taking the one thing I know what it is. So
macaroni and cheese.
I kind of yeah. That, oh, that was yeah. Okay, but I respectfully want to add something to this. Mm-hmm. They've taken music out of education so much. A lot of people really don't know what a tune is. They don't understand intervals. They, you know, at our age, they put instruments in our hands when we were in school.
Yeah.
And we had to learn them.
And I had to take music appreciation classes.
You sure did. And that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Was this mandatory when you went to school?
It was a mandatory course in college. I went to Centenary College in Shreveport, Louisiana. So that was liberal arts. Later I went to the University of Houston for communications, but at Centenary College, yes, it was a mandatory thing that you, among the credits that you have, you take some kind of an art appreciation. And I took music appreciation, and that dealt with all the classical music, the classical artists, the Mozarts and the Beethovens and all that sort of thing. And so I thought that was terrific. I thought that I got an opportunity to look into a window of something I otherwise wouldn't have looked into.
Yeah.
Because I had no interest in that kind of music at all.
Very good. Yeah. Well, Fred is the glue that kind of keeps Sweetwater together because he knows notation. He knows classical music very well. And he has kept us together because otherwise we have a little random parts that just would fly off, but he could keep it together with that knowledge. So that's why I'm just saying.
Did you always do the arrangements, Fred?
Mm-hmm. Most of them, yeah.
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 And so you would write, Nancy would write, you'd arrange.
Usually that's the way it was.
The way it worked, right. Well, you know, I think I've got a new band that I like to listen to. I've got music,
yay,
which is your legacy.
I'll
always have Sweetwater music because I keep my music. You know, it's funny about music with me. I like to listen to the same things over and over again. I will sometimes like to listen to something new, but I do go back and listen to a lot of the old songs that I keep in my library that I particularly enjoy, that make me relax, that make me think, that make me remember. All those sort of things.
Especially remember, boy, music is powerful because it can go places that words can't even get to. So sometimes you hear a song and you say, oh my gosh, that was the time I was walking on the beach, right? Or that was the time we kissed. Or whatever it is, mm-hmm. It's a way to really trigger a lot of things.
You know, the songs that had an impact, God Only Knows by the Beach Boys,
yeah,
that was one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Sunny by Bobby Hebb. it seems to me that was a song between me and a girl at the time I was dating.
Woo!
Woo! And Sonny, thank you for sunshine. Okay.
Even Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys, consider that God Only Knows is one of their best songs they ever wrote and recorded.
I think it's one of the best songs ever recorded by anybody. I thought
by their admission,
song,
though. Yeah. By their admission, yeah.
It was a tremendous song.
Just as a comment to current music, you sort of have to. Everything's a generalization, and there's probably more exceptions than to the rule. So I'm speaking mostly of our Western culture, and I'm speaking mostly of a commercial popular music that's put out today. As my point would be that most of the current generation in that category is where they, as you were saying, you like to listen to music. I sort of observe most people's hearing the music but not listening to it. The music now, what passes as music is pretty much an adjunct to whatever they're doing at that moment. It's just a background. It's a backdrop. And they're really not listening. Whoever really sits down and puts on a recording and pours a glass of wine and sits there and listens to something.
I'm going to do that tonight because I think that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Now?
Really.
No.
And the difference is it's, they're not listening, they're hearing. So
yeah, there's a
lyrics
difference.
Are lyrics to a lot of these
but
songs.
Don't you think that's true about a lot of things?
Yeah.
Don't you think that people, you know, you're talking and they're not listening, they're hearing?
Everything's
absolutely
short attention span these days. People don't read newspapers as much. They just read little sound bites off their mobile devices.
Well, a lot of that, too, is because of the mobile device, because you get push notifications. They send you the news. People don't get newspapers thrown in their driveway anymore.
Yeah. I do.
Do you?
Yeah, I love it. I love to hold the news.
Well, I like the feeling of a newspaper.
I
like
do.
That tactile thing going on, and you don't get that with the the phone or the iPad or whatever it is
you feel more in control when you're holding it for some reason, even though it's like bad. It's
but so here's what's interesting about that. From our generation, it's a generational point of view. From our generation, we grew up with newspapers, and in a transition where newspapers go away and digital comes in, we still had the feel of what that was like, and we still like that.
Same with people reading books.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Exactly the same way. Yeah. And so, you know, picking up a book and feeling the hardcover or the paperback is a nice feeling. You know, picking up a newspaper, feeling the newspaper. You know, I was out of town for a week, a couple of weeks ago, and they had one of the newspapers. It was in Boston. They had one of the newspapers out on the table. So every time you came downstairs to get a cup of coffee or something, the newspapers were out there waiting for you. Well, I grabbed those newspapers. I sat down. I read every article. I was sitting there enjoying the newspaper, which is something I don't do very often anymore because it comes to my phone. You know, if I want this one or that one, you just, you know, so many pennies a month. And there you go.
And time is money.
And time is money. But there is nothing better. Take my advice. Number one, if you want to feel something very relaxing, read a newspaper. Try not to read the articles that aren't so relaxing. And with regard to music, get a cup of wine. Sit back, put on your headset, listen to the words, right?
Yeah.
I think Fred's idea is brilliant.
You
listen
know,
to the words, listen to the thoughts.
I used to give an assignment. I tell my students, I say, you have to go and write the lyrics to this song. And we play something, say, by Tori Amos. She was a big one. And every single one of them said, we never listen to the words. Thank you. And they all, because they got to write to forget a grade, they had to write a paper about the words.
That's good.
It was a great assignment, but they all thanked me. They said, we never listened to the words. I didn't know that song was about that.
Yeah.
And so,
and how many of us can just bark out words from a song? Well, some songs, yes, but not a lot of songs necessarily. You can listen to a song on the radio. You'll start singing the first three words and then start going la, 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 because you can't remember the rest of the words, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're hard to understand. Sometimes you can't understand the words.
Well, you know, the best A&R guys, though, used to let a new song hit them as it did when they were a teenager. In other words, if they were attracted to the music, then they would, you know, put it in a category like, I'm going to listen to this again, and then they'd listen to the words.
Oh, I see.
So it's really not about, you know, a close inspection. It's about how it moves you, how it makes you feel.
Well, I think, and I'm getting way off base here, but I think, you know, like if I write a news story, I want you to understand the words that I put out there. I want you to understand the meaning and the nuances of what I put out there. And when you write a song, you want me to do the same thing. So I would argue that we all maybe ought to listen to music a little more carefully. What's the harm? What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell?
What the hell, yeah. Well, that's a very interesting topic because the music, the lyric and the music has to kind of work together to make sense, to draw this listener in. Because if the music's great and you really love the beat, whatever, and then all of a sudden the lyric doesn't go with that, it's too much of a disconnect.
I like things that are melodic. I do. I like things that you can hum along. Yeah. And when you get a song that's dissonant or has a lot of sentences to it and things that you can't really hum along to the song, maybe I don't listen as carefully either. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So,
what is the songwriter's term for that, Alex?
For him?
No, for the lyrics and music being equal.
Oh, prosody.
What is it?
Prosody.
Prosody.
It's like going to a film and seeing a sequence in the film where something emotional is happening. And if it isn't scored correctly, in other words, doesn't have the right music underneath it, people will get disinterested in the film and tune out. And so when there's a good marriage between the music underneath it and the scene that's being played out, then that's called good prosody.
That's interesting.
The music marriage does not draw the attention to itself.
Yes, doesn't draw attention, but it enhances the what's going on in the scene.
Right. This is fascinating.
Same in a song.
You know. So let's do this. So it's 50 years since you guys had hair. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that was long.
We got plenty of hair. It just isn't where we want it.
Very good. So as we sort of wrap this up, why don't you share sort of a thought, one, about the anniversary, and two, sort of about where Sweetwater is in its world. Nancy.
Oh, me first. I wanted to put a cap on it. Well, I would hope that this anniversary reignites some of that goodness that was there. And that's what I'd like to see energized. As far as Sweetwater, I don't know what's going to happen to us. I think a day at a time is a good, solid way to approach this thing. I mean, we have to work carefully on, you know, considering. You know, right now, we're sort of considering this anniversary. We're considering the music that we did. And we're not those same people, and we know that. And we're just a little bit careful with each other right now because we know we're not the same. But, you know, the future could go in a lot of different ways. And I'm kind of open to whatever it's going to be because that's part of the magic for me. So that's it. So now can I pass the baton?
You can, but I like that thought. And I also think that One Day at a Time is a good title for a song.
Well, let's get on it.
Ready?
One day at a time.
Fred, your final thought.
Well, I'm just happy to be alive. But just pretty much Nancy said, pretty much I agree with her, and I just second what she mentioned. And
you second the emotion?
Yeah.
That was the name of a song, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
I second the emotion.
There we go.
Yeah. That's right.
Alex?
We're doing it.
Basically, looking back on 1969, if that's what we're doing here.
Summer of 69.
It was the summer that changed everything in America. It gave youth their moment. I'm talking about young people. Because up until that point, the establishment just dismissed us. They didn't really think much about anything we had to say or do or so forth. And I think that summer just changed it. And it changed everything. And then, as Fred points out all the time, and then, of course, the establishment just decided to market to us after that. It's like, okay, now they have a voice. Let's sell them something, you know. But even so, it changed a lot of things. It changed the war. It was the beginning of the end of that war. And, the fact that I was in the Air Force at that time was very interesting.
Yeah, that's a story we didn't even mention. But when you got to Woodstock, when you got to New York, you had to turn around real quickly because the next day Alex had to report to a Marine Reserve unit.
Air Force Reserve.
Yeah, and so even though you weren't first, you were the first band, but not the first act.
Yeah, so
Richie Havens was the first act, but you had to turn around and get back to the West Coast pretty darn quick.
Right.
PDQ, right?
Yeah, didn't happen.
Yeah, You were late.
Yes, I was.
What'd they do to you?
A day and a half late. Oh, they kept me on pins and needles for the whole 2 weeks of summer training. And then at the end of it, they gave me back the newspapers I brought to them. Here's an interesting thing. I bought a bunch of newspapers in JFK thinking, well, I'll just show them the crowds and they'll understand. And I showed them my backstage pass, and I forgot all about it, and I thought I'd lost it until a few weeks ago. And I took out those old newspapers, and my backstage pass fell out of it, the one from Woodstock.
What a nice surprise.
Yeah, that was a 50-year surprise.
Only better would have been if $1,000 would have dropped out of the newspaper.
It's right? Probably worth more than that.
Yeah, it probably is true, is. Actually. Yeah, yeah.
They were probably...
Oh, modern man.
Probably about 150 or less of those issued, actually.
So real keepsakes. Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to say?
I want to say that Fred is also a good songwriter. The three of us are the songwriters. And Fred's an arranger of a lot of this, but he's also an excellent songwriter. You should include one of the songs. There's two songs you should include. Through an Old Storybook and Just for You.
Alex wrote Through an Old Storybook.
He did?
Yeah, he did.
Oh. He did.
Yeah.
So,
you guys have been giving you credit all this time.
Can I hear a little a cappella Just for You? Can you do it?
How are we going to be able to do that?
I don't know.
No. I don't know.
Is it instrumental?
Can. It's pretty instrumental.
Oh, okay.
It's heavily, yeah.
There's a bird that sings in it, and I had a part at the beginning that's not very good for that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But I want to see if I can get you to sing. Yeah. Is there anything I can get you guys to sing here in this studio in this moment?
I'm in a rainbow, and I'm feeling mighty good. Color vibrations passing me by. Some going through me, not telling me why. Some slow and some fast and some teaching me how to fly.
Second verse.
I'm in a rainbow.
But I think.
And I'm feeling mighty good. Color vibe. Oops.
Well, there you go.
I'm sort of lost without the music.
I was really enjoying that.
Oh, you were?
I thought that was terrific.
I'm in a rainbow. And I'm feeling mighty good. Color vibrations passing me by. Sun going.
Well, again, my thanks to Alex Del Zoppo, Fred Herrera, and Nancy Nevins. Three of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. And thanks for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe. And we'll see you next time.